it definitely shaped me into the performer that I am today. But, you know, I would say don't spend so much money on learning every like possible trick, but focus your attention on 5 tricks or so and make those 5 tricks the best 5 tricks you can possibly do.
Welcome back to another episode of the Making Magic podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host, and I'm a professional magician, speaker, and 3D designer. And this is all about inspiring conversations with the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers, the wizards behind the curtain that make the magic for you. Now, if this is your first time tuning into the show, thank you so much for doing so. It really does mean a lot to me because I put a lot of hard work into each and every one of these episodes. Whether you're listening to the sound of my voice on any one of the popular podcast apps or on YouTube, hopefully you'll decide if you're a podcast type of person that you'll follow the show. Follow me along for the ride and leave a healthy review of the show. And if you're here on YouTube, feel free to give this show a thumbs up, comment below, turn on the notification bell, and subscribe. You guys know what to do because I'm all about getting your creative gears turning, and that's what this show is all about. Whether you feel like you're stuck with a certain thought pattern and you want to break out of your current thought pattern, if you feel boxed in and trying to be inspired to think in new ways, well, I've got some of the world's most creative people that are sharing their process with you on this show. So I hope you decide to join me on the journey, and I'll be releasing episodes like every week now. So I hope you guys are enjoying this stuff. So with all that being said, let's learn a little bit more about our next guest. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Making Magic podcast. Now today, my special guest is the legend himself, Rick Smith Jr. He's also a good friend of mine. He's a multiple Guinness World Record holder, and he does creative card throwing trick shots, and he combines those with magic. And there's a lot more about his career that I'm sure he can fill you guys in on. But Rick, welcome to the Making Magic podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Sean. What's going on?
Yes, this is going to be a fun chat. So I know this is your first time going live in the context of a live video.
A live video on YouTube. This is the first time. So
that's okay. That's okay. We're gonna just all you have to do is just follow my lead, and you'll be just fine. So
I'm ready. So this can be good.
Yes, yes, yes. So in every episode, I always like to ask my guests what is the very first thing, like the story about the very first thing that they ever created. And this can be, in your case, perhaps a creative trick shot or maybe something with a deck of cards. You had mentioned you started off with a card flick, a card flourish technique.
Yeah, there were a lot of different card flicks that I started working with. So it all came with the world record card throwing stuff back in 2002. Okay. When I broke the Guinness Book World Record for throwing a playing card the farthest in the world, Michael Maxwell, A1 Magical Media, they put out my first DVD, The Art of Card Throwing. And I had to come up with different flicks and tricks. And I mean, that's really where it started in the world of magicians being able to see card throwing and magic performed simultaneously. So different flicks. So Audley Walsh had a trick where he took a deck of cards, he popped up a card, and basically he caught it in the deck. So the only thing that I did to change this, of having the card go up and catch it, was I ended up catching the card on the top of the deck the way that I would tilt the deck. I would catch the card face up. Mm. So instead of having to work really hard of flicking the card up and catching it in the middle of the deck, I would bring that card back, tilt the deck forward, and the card would end up, like, it's hard to do on the screen here, but
sure, sure.
It would tilt up and it would appear. So that was one of the first you know, card flicks that I came up with on my own. And like I said, it just, I did different TV shows. I did a whole bunch of things with playing cards, and that all, you know, started the whole card throwing trick shots.
Nice, nice. Yeah. So just to give the viewers that are watching some context, the listeners can't see this, but the viewers, Rick is in a hotel room. Rick is traveling. He's doing lots of shows. So he's not in his, well, he actually is kind of in his natural habitat traveling, but.
I don't like this natural habitat. No.
Rick has a much nicer setup at his place. These are just the circumstances for this. So we are working with them. So we got the card flick, and then that card flick led to many other things. And the reason why you made that was to solve a particular problem, right? It was just to eliminate certain things.
Yeah, because being able to catch the card, opening the deck and catching the card, basically all you had to do is tilt your deck forward and let the card land on top. And when the card went up and came back down, it would land face up on top of the deck, which it was just an easier way, but it looked really cool. I actually started doing it by accident first, and then I'm like, hey, is this something that I can control every single time? So now it's, you know, part of the act where you can actually take the card, flick it up, catch it, drop it on the table, and people are like, wow, that's my card. That's the card that they chose. So
nice, nice. And the reason why you made that was it was just something that worked better for you, and you were just inspired to think outside the box. Or was that an actual accident, like you said?
It was an accident, but I was forced, you know, when I created the first DVD on how to throw playing cards, I was forced to create other ways of flicking playing cards. That's where I came up with card throwing, flicks, nicks, and other cool tricks with playing cards. They wanted me to have a couple different things on there that, you know, magicians would like other than throwing cards. Because at first, when I started throwing cards, everyone in the magic world basically said there's no magic in card throwing. It's just a silly stunt. And I've tried to prove that wrong over the past 20 years, fooling Penn and Teller, doing, you know, a card throwing trick, you know, mixing magic and card throwing into my act, and performing 600 plus shows a year, doing card throwing it's a very small part of the act, but it's a really memorable part.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is. And it's kind of proof of concept about, you know, combining multiple passions to make a unique art form as the end result.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's what I try to do in my own show. Although I'm not a Guinness World Record card thrower, I have other passions and skills that are technically unrelated to magic, but they are other art forms like 3D design, right. 3D printing, music composition. And it really sets you apart, which is why you've had, I believe, part of the reason why you've had the success that you've had.
Absolutely. I mean, I've spoke about, you know, taking something that you love to do that has nothing to do with magic and integrating into your act. I mean, I was a baseball player, so I was a baseball pitcher and I loved to throw. So when I mix baseball and magic together, I ended up being the best card thrower in the world. Accuracy came with time. I mean, the quick story about, you know, the accuracy and the trick shots. The first TV show was in 2003 when I received a phone call from Dean Cain, Kelly Packard, and Tony Verga on a phone call for Ripley's Believe It or Not. And they're like, we saw that you can throw playing cards. We'd love to come out and film you. Can you slice a banana in half? I'm like, yeah. Can you throw a card over the hotel? Sure. Do this? Can you do that? And I just said, yes. I was only 21, maybe 22 at the time. And I'm like, I'm just going to say yes to everything. I want to be on this TV show. And
Right. Digging
deeper into this story, I didn't know that I can do all of the card throwing trick shots that I do now with paper playing cards. I was like gluing 5 cards together. I was putting pins. I was putting pins in the cards so I can pop balloons. I didn't realize my own strength. So funny thing is, all of these trick shots can actually be done with a regular deck of cards.
And I wasn't aware of that you stuck pins to cards and things like that. It reminds me of, like, you know, when boxers cheat and they put something extra in the gloves to make sure, you know.
Like, now, it wasn't cheating. mean, it was
right.
The show, the Ripley's, they wanted me to pop balloons. They wanted me to knock down cans. I even went so far that I went to one of my neighbors, in my childhood neighbors, who was in the World Wars, and he had playing cards that were made of steel. So I'm like, can I borrow some of these? And I ended up throwing playing cards and like going right through soda cans and exploding them. So yeah, it's kind of like where it all started. Ripley's Believe It or Not was the first opportunity.
That's awesome, man. And knowing what you know right now, Rick, if you were to go back in a magical time machine and revisit your earlier years, is there any advice you would give your younger selves to prevent yourself from making the mistakes that maybe you made earlier on?
Wow, that's a good question. Don't overthrow, you know, trust in your abilities of being able to throw. As a card thrower, I am a magician, so I wanna differentiate the two. Like, magic was always a hobby of mine. Since I was 7 years old, I would always do magic with cards, coins, rubber bands, and things like that. And okay. I was a lifeguard. I worked at the pool. I did card tricks, and I went to the magic shop and bought pretty much every prop magic that I possibly could back in the day. And basically, I didn't need to buy all of that stuff. I mean, yes, it definitely shaped me into the performer that I am today, but, you know, I would say don't spend so much money on learning every like possible trick, but focus your attention on five tricks or so and make those five tricks the best five tricks you can possibly do. So like later on when you're performing it over and over and over again, because you need 10,000 hours or whatever, you know, to master these tricks, you know, nothing against you or any other magician, but like when someone comes up, they're like, hey, Sean, that was a really good trick, but you need to see Rick Smith Jr. do that trick. So I'm just like, as long as you learn five tricks, that would go back in time and be like, as long as you know five solid tricks better than anyone else, it'll be the building blocks of taking your career further.
I agree. My mentor told me three. He trimmed it to three. He's like, just know three. Five, six, yeah. Five is, you know, nice to have a few extra, but the core principle is the same. Rather than getting so overcomplicated and trying to be the master of all tricks, which is pretty much impossible, you find what you're really good at, and then you hone in on that, which you obviously did. So
I'm still trying to do all, you know, I'm doing all of this stuff as much as I possibly can.
Right. Okay, well, what about something, so we kind of visited your past a little bit, what about something that you have recently made or created? And I think I know the answer to this, but maybe there's something I don't know.
I mean, like what I've created, like what do you mean?
Well, I would say, just to kind of get us along the right lines here, I would think that performance piece that was done on Penn and Teller was
yeah. That was made. We worked on that trick. I mean, my buddy Rockus from Lithuania, who was a previous Guinness Book World Record holder. Unfortunately, I broke his world record, but he was a previous world record holder, and we kind of, you know, combined forces and found out that if we combined our, you know, card throwing knowledge, we would be able to create this magic trick. And the reason it fooled Penn and Teller is a lot of you still watching this. When you go and watch the video, you still can't figure it out, and a lot of magicians have guessed, and no one has really been correct yet on how it's been actually done, which maybe is why it fooled Penn and Teller. But I think a card thrower mentality, not a magician mentality, would actually give you a better edge on how the trick actually works.
No pun intended, better edge. Nice one. Yeah. I like it. But no, I would consider that a recent creation, and I'm not talking about just building props, because I have people on this show that are not prop builders at all, but they create books, they create lectures, they create transformational experiences for companies, and I would consider the Penn and Teller thing a really fascinating creation, because it combines card throwing and magic, yeah. So it's like this magical card throwing performance piece.
Right. And then aside from magic and card throwing alone, I created a program that has never been done before. I created a program called Magic Gives Back. and Magic Gives Back is a way to give back to local schools and communities while performing a Las Vegas-style magic illusion and variety show. Instead of kids selling magazines and cookie dough, we give them the opportunity to sell tickets, give donations, and collect money for the schools. And we end up putting together my team of 19. We put together this Las Vegas-style show, you know, making big things appear and disappear, cutting people in half, everything. It's a great production. So that was another thing that we've recently created that was really something we're really looking forward to doing this year, 2023, coming up.
Yeah, I mean that's really nice, because instead of a physical product, you're selling a fun experience, and that's different than what's typically done in schools for fundraisers. And I was a Boy Scout. That's honest truth. And I just remember in Boy Scouts we would sell popcorn, and Girl Scouts sell,
right.
You know,
you are 100% correct there.
Yep. And Girl Scouts, right? They sell Girl Scout cookies, and those are both tangible, edible products. But a magic show in that context, I think, is really nice. And it's for a good cause. It's like, it's a win-win. So I that's probably why it's been.
And we've raised a lot of money for our local schools. I mean, we're pushing $500,000 already. So it's not terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fantastic, I would say. That's a better word of it. Now, being the multifaceted, multi-talented kind of person you are, are there any particular skills that you would consider kind of like your forte as far as creating? I mean, it seems like you, like from what the conversations that we've had in the past, you have taken a lot of different sleight of hand moves with cards, and you've kind of flipped them on their head a little bit. Without me going into too much method, there's one thing that you do that's kind of like the complete opposite, that involves the spreading of the cards and someone choosing a card.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I found very, very interesting, you know.
Without revealing anything to anybody, that routine, that method that I do, I have fooled the people that have done videos on how the method works. So, yes, that is one thing that I feel that I've done my 10,000 hours or 10,000 times, that I feel that I could almost say that I can do it better than anyone without being cocky about it or anything. I really feel like is the biggest, best utility move a magician can have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be happy to share with any of you magicians that are watching, just come up to me and ask me what that one move is, and I will tell you.
That's right. Right. See Rick at the context of a convention. He was just at some type of card convention, bicycle card.
Yeah. CardCon, bicycle. I just had a conversation with them today, earlier on my drive, and it looks like we're going to be doing it again. And right now we're working on location and performers, and, you know, and they're asking me, I don't know why, but they're asking me for like, who else should come to this, and who else would be, you know, a good part, and, you know, maybe we should get Sean Jay on there.
I didn't say it. You did, but hey,
I did.
You read my mind.
What's going to happen?
Could happen. Could magically appear at CardCon. We'll see. We'll see. We'll talk. So, yeah, I mean, see, what I find interesting about you, Rick, is like I don't think you really understand how creative you actually are. It's just kind of like this. Maybe for you, it's just kind of like you have an idea and you just know how it's going to tailor fit to you. And then you incorporate it with your regular program. And then because it's you and because it's what you do, you don't really think much of it. But the card move that we were just discussing, to me, I think is, you know, a great example. The Magic Gives Back is another example. And I think the overarching theme that we all can learn from this, it's kind of, Like with you, Rick, it seems like if you don't like something, you don't have any problem changing it. You're like, this is what was given to me, or this is what I learned, this technique, but there's a weakness here. So you know what? Let me just try doing it this way. Let me just see what happens. And then you do, and you're like, oh my goodness, this is like 10 times better, so I'm just going to keep doing it this way, rather than following dogma and saying, no, this is what the book said. This is exactly what I have to do every time.
Yeah. I mean, I that's funny that you say that, because I was at CardCon, Richard Turner. Do you know Richard Turner?
I do.
And I mean, he was saying, he goes, practice makes perfect. No, it doesn't. You can practice something the wrong way many, many times, and it will be perfectly wrong. He's like, perfect practice makes perfect. So I feel like that was funny that you just said that. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I just know how to weave this stuff in. I wasn't aware that he made that comment, but it doesn't surprise me.
He was amazing. That guy, I've never seen anything like that. But yeah, I know where I was going with that. People tell me that you can't do something, I want to do it. And basically, you know, he's blind and, you know, he gets a shuffle deck of cards and he's like, well, you're not going to be able to find the four whatevers. And he's like, well, yes, I will. And he does. And it was actually amazing to see in real life.
And he probably hasn't seen anything like that ever before either. That was a little slipped in there. But for those of you who know Richard Turner.
All jokes aside, that was one of the cool things that he was talking about. He is blind. He can't see. Most people think that his blindness would be in darkness. But he says, I'm not. He's like, I live in a virtual world that I see colors. And I take the colors and I turn everything, all these colors, into a deck of cards, into this and this and that. And that's why he can see through virtual reality in his mind because of the colors and the way that light is hitting. I mean, that's why he's won karate championships being blind. That's why he rode a motorcycle being blind. That's why he did all of these things. And having him speak at this convention at CardCon, like, this is something that, you know, I encourage anybody that's watching, like, this is not your typical magic cardistry convention. This is a convention, you know, that really gets people interested in the history of playing cards. And the first bicycle deck was there. It was 130 years old. It was awesome.
And for those of that are watching, listening, that don't know who Richard Turner is, I mean, Rick's already mentioned that he is a blind magician / card technician, meaning he uses his blindness to his advantage in the sense that, as most of you already know, you know, when one of your senses go, your body tends to compensate. And so in his case, his fingers are super, super sensitive, which is why I think he has the title of chief touch analyst at Bicycle or something. You know,
who knows? He can do things that we will never be able to do, even if we tried.
And he should probably be a guest on my show. Okay, he'd be a fascinating guest.
We can make that happen.
Thanks. I'm going to definitely be reaching out to him, probably with your help. So this is about Rick at this moment, even though we went off on that little bit there. I mean, Rick,
off topic very quickly.
No, it's all good, because like, what we can learn from Richard too, it's the same principle. Even from, you know, people who have so-called disabilities, they don't accept, they're better at not accepting no as an answer, because literally they have no other choice. And if they want to live and survive, they have to figure out, they have to be creative and find workarounds. So it's fascinating how he was able to do that and how you were able to do that. What about any techniques, any creative techniques that you're interested in learning in the upcoming year? Whether it doesn't have to be just sleight of hand with cards. It could be a technique on building a product for your business, or anything that involves building or creating something.
I mean, right now I'm still creating this whole platform with Magic Gives Back. That's something that I'm working on. I'm working on multiple websites to get them bigger and better and, you know, more optimized than they've ever been before. Still working on perfect estimation. I mean, another magician that I'll mention that I met 20 years ago at the castle, Howard Hamburg, showed me perfect estimation, where he would cut to a spot in the deck and he'd ask what card I saw, and I would say it was the five of hearts, and he would spell FIVEOFHERTS, and the next card was the five of hearts.
Nice.
And he's like, I can show it to you, but you'll never be able to do it. And again, my whole mind was like, well, yes, I will. As long as you show me how this is done, I will learn it. And I mean, 20 years later, I would say with 95% confidence that I can pretty much nail that trick within one card 95% of the time. Not perfect yet. I'm no Howard Hamburg, but again, he was 70 or something when he showed me that. So I still have some years to catch up.
Exactly. You're still a young whippersnapper.
Still practicing.
And for those of you, he mentioned the term estimation, which basically means if you have a deck of cards, there's 52, reaching over and estimating the exact numbers. So you say, I'm going to cut to 13 cards, and then you pick up exactly 13, exactly 27, just by feel alone. And that in itself is a pretty magical skill. Whenever I've gone to the eye doctor, that's what I do after they dilate my eyes because I can't see. And so I have a deck of cards with me, and I just, you know, my eyes basically closed. I try mess around with estimation, which is pretty awesome. So
yeah, it is.
What about your favorite? What would be your favorite creation of the past? If you have something like Rick Smith Jr.'s greatest hits in the past, what's like a big highlight that, from your creative vault?
Oh, you know, when we had no money at all, my buddy Mike and I, we created all of our illusions. We created a spirit cabinet. We created a metamorphosis subtrunk illusion. We created a cutting in half. We even had a trick where we called it the liposuction machine, where it basically was a thing that you would lay down on. You put the girl on there.
Okay.
And we had one of those double mirrors in there. Like, what are those things called? Not kaleidoscope. What is it called when it's out of a submarine?
Submarine. Periscope?
Periscope. So it basically was two mirrors like a periscope. So okay. When you looked in, you still saw the body behind it, but you could see right through. So we put like a vacuum cleaner on there and sucked out the middle of the person. I'm not trying to reveal any magic, but I think it's okay.
I don't think anything. It was earth shattering there that you said, like, going to rock anybody's boat too much.
But it was so cool. I mean, that was like, we were creating tricks back in the day, you know, how to put the hand through the body and, you know, have it come on the other side. We had to create everything. Like, even if we saw an idea that we saw in like World's Greatest Magic at Thanksgiving time, you know, we had to come up with different ways that we could do it for free, or, you know, buying some really inexpensive lumber, being 15, 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. We didn't invest much in the show, but we made all of our props. We made all of our decorations. We made fake trees. We had backgrounds. I mean, it was pretty crazy. Watching those videos now is really crazy.
It's probably embarrassing. You probably can barely get through it, right?
I love it. I think it's super goofy. I'm like, I can't believe we actually did this and people paid for it.
Yeah. Well, that tells you just how far, number one, you've progressed, and number two, you know, people, if the support is there, people will pay regardless, just based on.
Support's been, you know, amazing. And this career, this journey, I mean, minus COVID for, you know, a couple years, a year and a half, 2 years. I mean, I went from doing 500-600 shows a year to this year, I'll probably do more. I mean, this year is a little bit crazier than your typical year. I mean, like today alone, I did 4 shows, 4 school assemblies, 400-500 kids at each school assembly today. So
that's because you're a machine. You're a machine, Rick. Tell me your secrets. How do you do it? Endurance.
I love doing them, but I don't want to be doing this many of them.
Got it. Well, time to raise your price. Maybe.
It doesn't work. It
doesn't work like that. Okay. Well, don't take my advice on any of that stuff. You're obviously doing just fine. So is there anything that you've ever created or you were working on, some kind of idea or something, but then it like blew up in your face and ended up being like this massive epic fail? And good, funny stories are always welcome too.
I mean, epic fail, sure. I mean, back in 2007, 2008, I was asked to perform at my first trade show, and I had no idea what a trade show would pay or whatever. So I just threw out a number. I called a couple of trade show magicians, and I don't know. I pretended maybe that I was a company looking for some type of entertainment just to see what their rates would have been. And I ended up charging a lot. It was a lot of money back then. I mean, it was like $3,500 or something of that caliber. And they wanted me to, it was a paperless company. They wanted to take things paper and turn them into digital format. So what I did was I created an illusion of a file cabinet, and basically the file cabinet disappeared and I had CDs in my hand.
Okay.
But the epic fail, is the trick didn't work like I wanted it to. You know, it was like a folding, it was like a retractable file cabinet. So it was kind of cheesy, but they still liked the performance. But the guy's like, $3,500. Thank you so much. Last year, the guy charges $15,000 for the first day, $15,000 for the second day, and $10,000 for the third. For $3,500, we got a steal. And I'm like, oh, epic fail. I could have charged way more for this.
They sure did get a steal. That's for sure. They did.
I just was getting into it. I mean, I think I got a couple TV shows under my belt, and they wanted me for that, for their trade show booth, which was still good. I've worked for the company probably 4 or 5 times, and I've learned to charge more each and every time.
Exactly. Well, they should pay for the value that they're getting. That is for sure. Wow. Okay. Well, consider yourself lucky that it didn't like break on you or totally collapse in front of the audience.
But like at the end of the trade show, we spent like $2,500 on this file cabinet trick that they paid for. And I was so disappointed with it, I left it there. I didn't even take it home with me.
It's so, like this thing, nah, we're just gonna
garbage.
Bye, Felicia, out the window. Just push it into the trash. Oh man. Well, that's a lot better. I had Tony Clark on as a guest, award winner. And he had a much, much worse story than you did. It was actually very dangerous. I think he was performing inside of a nightclub of sorts, and he made some type of big chandelier appear as a part of his manipulation dove act thing he was doing at that time. Phantom of the Opera, you know, very classic Renaissance. Something about chandelier and fire, and something chandelier catching on fire, and then a silk caught on fire, and it was this big. He said it happened in rehearsal, though, thankfully not during the live show, but a lot of stuff caught on fire. And
fire's not always the best option. One more story. My first paid magic show, I think I'm 14 or 15 years old, and I was only charging like $30 for this birthday party. $30 for 30 minutes. I thought that was a steal.
Yes.
Anyway, I was 14. Didn't matter. But I also thought fire was cool, and I thought flash paper was cool, and I thought the little stuff that you put in the flash paper that sparkled when you lit it was cool. Well, first show ever, I'm about to like start the show, and I put extra powder in the flash paper. I light it, throw it up to start the show, and it fizzles as it's fizzling, and it's still fizzling, and burnt a 2-inch hole in their living room carpet. And the reason they were hiring me was their housewarming party. They just built the house and they just put this carpet in. And it went in the day before I burnt it. Well, long story short, 25 years later, they run into me and they're like, we found out you did all of these TV shows and blah, blah, blah. We left it. And we just finally had to cut it out. And we have a frame in our house of a piece of carpet with a hole in it saying Rick Smith Jr.'s first magic show almost caught our house on fire.
What?
So, I thought
they were going to be mad or something and be like, that was you. Oh, that you have enough money, you can.
They were so excited. And I never did fire in that ever again in a show. And that was my first show.
Yeah, so this was the sparkle powder, the gray stuff?
Yeah, it was something. It was flash paper. It was like a square piece of flash paper with, it was like in a little gunpowder
yes.
container. and you shook it in there. You twisted it, lit the twist, and then all the way to the ground, and then fizzled in the ground, and then went out after it made a two-inch hole.
So that was, you know, some people leave. Now you leave playing cards and sliced up vegetables on the floor, which is a lot easier to clean up.
That is, but, yeah.
And it's not permanent.
I guess so.
But
I really have never told that before, so making magic here, right here on your podcast.
You heard it first, guys. Rick burned a two-inch hole in somebody's carpet, but that's irrelevant at this point. Nobody cares because everything else has made up for that, and they framed it. So that just goes to show you how much they appreciated that. So what about accidental? Because like when I bring in innovative people onto this show, like when people are tinkering with stuff, right? We're working on whatever this is, and sometimes we think it's not special or it's nothing really, anything to be had there. But then all of a sudden, it's like this accidental creation that's amazing. And then after you go, oh man, I never thought it was going to turn into this. That actually needs to go in my show, or that's going to be my new product I'm going to sell. And it's just happy accident kind of thing.
I mean, there was an accident, I guess, with like card throwing trick shots. Like, I couldn't figure out how to light a match with a playing card. So I was like, I'll just tape a piece of phosphate to a playing card and see if I can have that phosphate paper hit the match. And it ended up being something that I ended up turning into a striker card, I called them. And I ended up selling hundreds of them, where it was just a piece of phosphate paper taped to the back of a Falcon throwing card, right in the perfect little part of the square. And then when you threw it over a match, light that match right up. And, you know, I sold them as replacement, you know, cards that you'd have to throw down at them. And, you know, people were buying a whole bunch of them at first. So.
No, I think that's a really cool story of something accidental. And we started off initially talking about your trick shot career just briefly, but for the viewers and listeners, you're known for, I mean, you are, that's what you're known for, is creative trick shots. You're slicing this, slicing that, throwing it. Didn't you throw a card into a window of a moving car as a car was going by? Have you done that one?
Yeah, it was for a commercial in England. It was for moving further, faster. It was for a casino, and they had a BMW i8, I think, and it was driving around me about 60, 75 miles an hour with the window open, this open, and I had to follow the car without getting dizzy, for one. I was on a platform. Mm. Follow the car and then time it so I would throw the playing card through the window as it drove around me. That was pretty difficult. But, I mean, those trick shots that I first started with, those, it was all before the YouTube stuff, too. Like, they were having me take out one poker chip or break a wine glass. Or I even stood 15 feet away and dealt a poker hand, like a blackjack hand, by throwing the playing cards onto the table. But nice. It was for a casino, so it ended up working out pretty good. But, yeah, all of the the different trick shots, they came in with a little marketing slogan for it, and it ended up being pretty cool.
Now, when you come up with creative trick shots, what is the process for going from point A to point B? Is it really simple, or is it complex?
Yeah, no, super simple. I mean, challenge me to do something and I'll try to do it. So, for example, we were on Dude Perfect, the TV show, or the YouTube channel show. Mm-hmm. And at first, when they reached out, they wanted me to do these trick shots. And I'm like, well, I don't really do any trick shots. I throw playing cards and I slice a piece of celery in half. They're like, well, that's a trick shot. And I said, what else can you slice in half? I'm like, a carrot, a cucumber, a flower, an olive. You know, an olive, really? All right, you're coming on our show. So, I mean, it all became down to like, All right, can you hit the olive? Sure. Can you throw it up in the air and then hit the olive? Sure. And then move back further and further and further and just keep taking it to the limits where it looks like it should be impossible. And then one story about the olive is I can do that. I can do that live. I can slice an olive in half live in one of my shows, which isn't typical for, you know, you would think trick shots. Like it's impossible to do these things. You know, people think it takes hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. But I do these live. I do these in my show. And the cool part about the Dude Perfect is they were so meticulous about making sure that the trick shot was perfect. They threw that olive up and I sliced it in half and the little red thing came out of the olive. And they're like, oh, that was cool. But let's see if we can get more in the center. And the next one, I slice it long ways. And they're like, oh, it was in the crack. And the next time I sliced just a little piece off of it. They're like, it has to be dead center in the middle of the screen. So it was like the fourth or fifth attempt.
That's it?
Probably fourth or fifth. I actually sliced four or five of them before they were happy with that olive slicer, the one that I threw. But yeah, I sliced it a whole bunch of times before they actually took it because we wanted to make sure it was framed right.
And
the cool thing about that, a little story about Dude Perfect is they were so excited that I can do trick shots live. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody wants to go, the Dude Perfect cruise, they hired me to come onto the ship and put on an hour magic show with live trick shots that people will be able to witness live on stage on a Norwegian cruise line from Miami to the Bahamas, January 20th through the 23rd, which is going to be phenomenal.
Nice way to slip in the plug there. That was awesome. Very smooth. Well done. I like it. That's cool. So Dude Perfect for the YouTube crowd, Dude Perfect is obviously, pretty big channel, pretty big platform. You've done another collab. You did some stuff with That's Amazing as well, right?
Yeah. I've been so fortunate. I've been able to work with Dude Perfect. I've worked with the Slow Mo guys, Mark Rober, the mechanical engineer from NASA. That's Amazing. Brent Rivera, Scam Nation, Scam School, Making Magic Podcast. I mean, there's been a ton of YouTube that I've worked on. So
I made it to the big channel list. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. No, but thank you. No, I mean, and each one that you do like challenges you in different ways. And what I love, like, even though you're not like this painter or this intricate prop builder, I love your attitude towards just basically everything, in the sense that it's kind of like, if it hasn't been done, you have this natural innate curiosity, which is what a creative mind should have, the innate curiosity to go, well, let's try it, let's see what happens. I'm not going to try it because it's totally impossible, just I'm not going to even waste my time. You're like, well, let's see. Let's try it like right now.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, same thing with the olive. The second time I went for my second video I did, my second collaboration with Dude Perfect, yep. They're like, we got to step it up. I'm like, well, we did an olive last time. Let's throw up a little pea and see how we do that. You know? And I nailed it out of the air, exploded it. I mean, if they have me back again, I'm going to have to do a grain of sand. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. I mean, a water drop? I don't know. It's got to be something crazy. It's got to be something small and fast and impossible.
How about splitting the atom with Mark Rober?
That's Mark Rober. That is like one of the coolest down-to-earth guys I've ever met. I mean, he's been there to help. I've had questions on YouTube things in the past, and he's never hesitated to help. He's never hesitated to hop on a call. He's never hesitated. He's a real good guy. Like, you watch him on YouTube, you have no idea if he's a good person or not. Dude Perfect. They're really good guys. They have families. They're all energetic and fun. That's Amazing. The good group of kids, like their parents, they really make sure that these kids are good kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's fun being around them. And they're very creative. And basically all the people that I've worked with on YouTube have been good. There's probably one that I'm not going to mention that I would have mentioned a few years ago, but he may have done something that he shouldn't have. So I don't really talk about him anymore, but
okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of good YouTubers out there. Most of them are, you know, just regular guys, regular normal people that like posting videos, just like you.
Exactly. I'm working on upping my video posting game, this being a part of it. So I appreciate you contributing your energy, your knowledge, and insight into this creative world here.
Yeah, so much fun.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. The I want to go back just touch on that Penn and Teller thing one more time, just because I know there's something that everybody can learn from this. When coming up with a concept for that, what was the original seed of the idea? Was it making the picture, or was it the prediction coming true part?
Well, let's talk about that, because yes, it was magic. Yes, it was a prediction. Yes, it was a trick. Mm-hmm. But was there an easier way of doing it? Yes. Was the easier way expensive? Yes. The easier way of doing it without revealing anything, because it still is an idea of working it out. But the idea of doing this was going to cost us $5,000. And basically any picture that they would have stuck it in, that picture would have appeared on that platform. Mm. But then we're getting into technical, you know, technology and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So when I talked with Rockus and I said, hey, dude, I actually can do this. Like, not a magic trick. I can actually throw playing cards and draw the image of what they're going to select. And I mean, there was a lot of hesitation. Like, no. I think we should each put in $2,500. And, you know, what happens if they do this one or this one? And, you know, and it's a fail. It fails. I'm like, I'm confident. I don't want to spend the $5,000. I think it's going to look way better if we do it for real, even though, you know, magic, it's still, there might be a gimmick or something, but we did it for real. No gimmicks. We did a solid piece of magic, which that's where it started blowing people away, because we did a solid piece of magic that had no known method that exists, and we created the ultimate card throwing magic trick.
Yeah, because the real part, I mean, I guess everybody experienced it as real, but the real, no hidden method part was using the skill of throwing cards and sticking them into a board to create an image, which is really correct. Fascinating.
Yeah. And I mean, Penn and Teller, they were so impressed, and they talked to us for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes after the show. And, you know, they had so many ideas of how the trick could have been done. And some of those ideas we thought about cheating and swapping out something if they hit it. And it all came down to, let's avoid the cheating. Let's avoid the gimmicks. Let's fool them with pure skill trick, a pure skilled magic trick that they'll have no way to figure out, like impossible. And it worked, and it fooled them, and we got the FU trophy.
Nice. Awesome. Well, no, that's a great backstory to just give people a context of what that was, how it came to be. Y'all can check that out on YouTube if you type in.
No, you can't. They blocked it again for the
fourth time. Oh, they did? I was trying to help you out.
They'll unblock it again, I'm assuming they will. Like, it's Sony that blocks it, and then some other company blocks it, and then some other company.
Man.
So it's like our likeness on the YouTube, but they keep blocking back and forth. And they unblock it eventually, but right now it's blocked right this second.
Bummer. Okay, well, I was trying to tell you.
I did this really cool routine on Jimmy Fallon. It gets on millions and millions of views on YouTube, and then because the guy was playing a Kelly Clarkson song, they got blocked. Thanks, Kelly.
You could thank the legal team for YouTube probably for that. They're very tight about that. Even things that I have purchased, like royalty-free music that says royalty-free, you can use this for YouTube. I've had instances where I've been flagged
You know what? I mean, I have a message right now on my phone from a video 5 years ago that I posted that says, after manual review, we realize that you have copyrighted music between 20 seconds and 45 seconds. So we're demonetizing this video. And of course, I have the license from 5 years ago, but come on, it's 5 years ago. Like, that's not YouTube. That's like the music industry. That's like, that's a big problem in the YouTube world. Mr. Beast has had the same thing. He's had videos go super viral, and then all of a sudden, there's a audio clip in there that demonetizes his whole video.
ASCAP, BMI, that's the music industry agencies that do all that music rights stuff. Bummer. Okay, so I was trying to help you out there. Well, anyways, that's okay. But keep an eye, if for those of you watching and listening, keep an eye out. Do some Googling. Maybe you'll find it on some other video hosting site or something posted somewhere.
We have the video. We just got to post. We have to figure out how we can share it.
Covert way of sharing it. Okay. Well, Rick's been on the I can assure you that Rick's been on the show with Rockus. They did this fantastic card throwing magic piece, which you just heard about. So we'll eventually be able to surface that video, hopefully, if we're lucky.
Yep, it will be that.
So Rick, as we kind of sew everything together, because we've touched on a lot of different things, I wanna take it back to like the core of Rick Smith Jr., who you are. Was there a moment in your life that you decided to say, okay, I'm going to, like, have you always been that kind of person where if you didn't like something, you just instantly want to change it? Because some people that I talk to, they say, I was this way for a really long time, but then as soon as something happened in my life, I made the decision, I'm going to be this innovator. I'm going to be this one who's going to push the bar forward.
You know, I like the change of the performance. I like the change of the tricks and ideas. And, you know, I mean, I got married 12, 13 years ago. I mean, I was dating her probably seven years prior to getting married. And, you know, like, she helped, you know, change me into the performer that I am. I mean, she's a performer herself. She was American Idol finalist season 2, and she sings in a band. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I had no idea.
I'm going to share a video with you when we're done.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I learned from her. I learned from her family. I learned from friends of mine. I learned from, you know, just the way of everybody in some way or another has shaped me into the performer that I am today. And I don't take credit. I don't say I just did all this myself. Because I didn't. I had lots of help along the way, lots of friends, lots of people to, you know, surround myself with. And, you know, I feel like if you surround yourself with good, positive people, those people will help you make good, positive choices as you move along. So,
yeah. So that begs the question, you mentioned your now wife, is there anybody specific that's like in your VIP highlight list? People that you would credit that have inspired you along your journey? Top mentors?
I mean, there's been magicians that have inspired me big time. I mean, Newell Unfried, you probably don't even know who that is, but
no.
he was a FISM. He taught a lot of FISM winners. He inspired me. I mean, of course, I know even you and Jeff McBride inspired me as a card manipulator early on in my career. He bounced cards, and I mean, I was still throwing, but he was bouncing them, and I thought that was kind of cool. So in a way, that inspired me. You know, Michael Amar and all of his card handling moves, and Leonard Green, and, you know, early magicians that, you know, you had to buy VHS tapes to learn. Those are the guys that inspired me. I mean, even magicians that I don't even want to mention that I may have seen on national TV that had their own TV specials, they inspired me till I met them. I'm just saying, I'm not going to say anybody because it could be anybody, but
yep, anybody.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that have done that. My dad knew like two good card tricks. My uncle knew a really cool coin trick and a ball, like a juggling ball trick. My grandfather knew like a tube, like it was a steel tube and steel ball trick. You probably know what it is. It's a very beginner magic trick, but like everybody had different parts. The stories get even better than that. My dad's friends from high school used to go to Geneva on the Lake, where there was a magic shop, and they had drawers of magic that once they found out that I was interested at 12, 13 years old, they brought all the magic and said, good luck, kid. It's all yours. Do what you want with it. Try to make something out of it. My neighbor behind me had a magic box that my mom recently framed for me because she found it in the basement, but the neighbor gave it to me. But all the instructions were in German. So my mom's best friend growing up was German, and she would read me some of the magic things in the German instructions so I would learn how to do certain tricks. And the one trick that she taught me that I ended up doing was an old trick where there was a picnic table in the backyard. I had two baseball bats with shoes on them. I had a cloth on top of it. I would raise myself up so it looked like I was levitating on the picnic table. That had a sheet over me.
Got it. So the baseball bats were the form that made it look like your legs.
Yes, with shoes on them. And I was rising up, and then the German lady that was helped me learn some of these tricks in the book, she forgot that she was telling me about that trick, and she's like to my mom, look, your son. He's floating outside on the table. So I mean, it was cool. I had supporting neighbors. There were a lot of elderly neighbors when I was younger, but nice. they would pay a quarter to come in the basement and watch my magic show that I did and made tinfoil balls float. And I don't even know who's watching, but like pipe works was a thing back in the day where you can put these pipes together and you can make cars, you can make houses, you can make whatever. Anyway, I made like metamorphosis boxes where I had a little thing, I threw a cloth on it, I'd be gone, and then I would, hover to the other box and disappear and peer behind the people that were watching in my basement. It was so, yes, a lot of people helped me along the way, a lot of inspiration, a lot of watching magic, and I was able to take different techniques and different things from everybody and turn things into my own presentation and make my show unique and, I guess, in demand, since they're doing over 600 shows a year doing this presentation.
Heck yeah, man. That right there is incredible. And it's nice that you had a supportive environment growing up. And I want people to understand the value of that really is priceless. You can't really pay for it, I guess, unless you
my parents both said, hey, as long as you go to college, you can do whatever you want. If you want to do shows, magic shows for a living, go for it, but you need to go to college, you need to do 4 years. So I said, all right, well, get some baseball. I got a baseball scholarship. I'm like, all right, I'll go play baseball. And I went and played baseball, got my degree in marketing. And I used college to my advantage. In my creative mind, I didn't do any college work. And I'm not telling you kids to do that, but basically what I did with all my marketing classes, I was the brains of the operation. I told, all right, Christine, so-and-so, Joe, blah, 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 you guys are going to do the integrated marketing campaign. You guys are going to pretend that we're having an entertainment agency and we're going to book all these different types of entertainers. You guys look up the different entertainers. All right, you guys over there, you guys are going to work on the SWOT analysis. You're going to do the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, the threats. You guys are going to figure out why Rick Smith Jr. Incorporated is going to be the magic company that people are going to want to use and who are the competitors and blah, blah, blah. And you guys, I will be the presenter. I will present everything that you guys create. And I'll present it in front of the class. And that's basically my 4 years of college was making an integrated marketing campaign, SWOT analysis of Rick Smith Jr. Inc. and Cleveland Entertainers, my first two businesses that I incorporated as soon as I got out of college.
That's so, that is another thing that I haven't heard of before. I haven't heard this story. I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard it either.
I don't talk about this stuff. I mean, I'm not the best speaker, and, you know, but if you give me magic props and I can integrate magic into my presentation, it was a way for me as a magician to get in front of a large crowd and be able to speak to them, showing them magic, but also getting the marketing message that I wanted to. And then I had teachers in college. They're like, we've never given 100% before because no one's ever entertained us and got the message across. But you did. So you're the first one in history to get 100%. Thank you so much. So, I mean, I have a couple people like that, a couple teachers that were like, we don't get it. Like you can present using magic and captivate the whole classroom where we've never seen that before in our entire lives.
That's that I would say is pretty creative use of the circumstances. It's like so I'm going to go to college, but let's just use this as leverage to help me with my business.
So college was a very good choice. And then as soon as I got out of college, I was making more than my parents. And they're like, go ahead, be a magician. I'm like, all right. Bought my first house 1 year out of college.
That's awesome, man. That's very inspiring, guys. So I hope you all were listening. Rick.
And that's pre-world record stuff.
Pre-world record stuff.
There's people out there. I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep interrupting you, but a lot of people say, you know, you made all this money doing magic shows, doing your card throwing, and all that stuff that I just mentioned was all pre-world record, all pre-TV, all, you know, making a career prior to having these accomplishments.
That's good to keep in mind because your mindset was in the right place, number one. You had the right mindset methodology behind it, creating this whole marketing campaign starting in college, which I find really cool. So you heard it first, guys, here, and it is now officially on record. Rick is actually recommending. Are you recommending college then?
Yeah, 100%. That was the best time ever. I learned so much marketing strategies that people are paying thousands of dollars to learn nowadays that you learn not for free, but if you're playing baseball, maybe for free, but you know, you learn those techniques, use them in real life situations. Instead of going with McDonald's, make a marketing campaign for your entertainment business.
That's inspiring. So guys, be fearless. If you see something that's broke, maybe you can fix it. There's the saying, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But perhaps if we take it a step further, if you yourself see something that needs to be fixed, rather than waiting for someone else to fix it, maybe you and maybe Rick, hopefully, was able to spark that creativity and curiosity in your mind to change whatever is broken or doesn't work for you or doesn't fit your style and fix it to your own. And then another thing that just a recurring theme in your life and career is it seems like you're not doesn't seem like you turn down a lot of different opportunities. You seem like you say yes to a lot of different things, even if you may not know exactly how to do it. And then you just give yourself no other option to figure it out.
Yeah. I'd like to try to take as many opportunities as possible that are given to me. I don't like saying no. I like doing everything from kids' parties to the biggest corporate events in the world. There was one show that I had to say no to this year, which was a show in Romania for one of the Got Talent shows. But it wasn't that I couldn't say no, it's just I couldn't do the 36 hours there and the 40 something hours back to be in their country for 12 hours. I just couldn't do it. So one of my first notes.
Right. Well, no, there's always reasons and circumstances, and that's totally understandable. So Rick, last couple questions here. Who do you currently look up to that you find creative and innovative today? Besides Sean Jay, of course.
I was going to say that would be my number one person right there.
That's very kind of you.
I think of you as a very creative person. And
Oh, come on. I'm not. Stop.
I've worked with some of the best YouTubers in the world. And I mean, I don't know how much they know about you, but you know, like some of these YouTubers are reaching out to you because you're creative enough to be able to help them with their millions and millions of subscribers. So yes, I do think you are a creative person. I think a lot of the people I surround myself with are creative in one way or another. So there's no one I look up to like specific. There's not one individual person that I'm like, well, that's the most creative person. And I want to be just like that person. I try to take stuff from everybody and listen very carefully, especially, you know, I've worked with the best YouTubers in the world, and every single one of them that I've worked with have taught me something different that have helped me grow over 1.6 million subscribers on YouTube. So,
So surround yourself with the people that inspire you, the people that are smarter than you and are where you want to be. And
yeah. Are you smarter than a kindergartner, Sean Jay?
I would hope so.
Yeah. Say the word silk five times.
Say the word silk?
Yeah.
Five times?
Yeah, go.
Silk five times?
Yeah. Silk, 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 silk.
Okay, silk, 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 silk.
What do cows drink?
Milk.
Water. They produce milk, though. It was a good try. It was a good try, Sean. It was a good try.
Wow, see that? Look at that. So apparently we've discovered a lot of things. I've just been put to shame by the test of the smarter than a whatever test. And that is proof of how easy our minds are to fool. So think about this, folks. Don't make assumptions, just like I did with that mind bender. Stop making assumptions. If you don't like what you're going through or what you have or what you see, change it. And have an attitude like Rick Smith Jr. He's a very positive guy. That's one of the reasons why I have him on the show. And it just emanates, and that's it. It brings in opportunities. People like that. So I think we've learned a lot here. I've learned a lot by having this chat with you, Rick. And as we bring things to a close here, bring things full circle, I want you to share with the Making Magic audience, where can people, viewers and listeners, find out more about Rick Smith Jr.?
And you know what? You can just look me up on YouTube at Rick Smith Jr. You'll find me. I'm on all the social media platforms from Instagram to Facebook to Twitter. My biggest platform right now is YouTube. My second biggest platform is TikTok. But yeah, ricksmithjr.com. Check it out. If you guys need any magicians, ask Sean Jay first. And then if you need anybody, I'm here.
So. Got it. Especially if you're in the Cleveland, Ohio area, Rick is like the go-to guy, has been for a long time. So you'll be in good hands. So this has been a fascinating, mind-expanding chat with the one and only legend. That is Rick Smith Jr. And I think if I've done my job right, if we've done our job right, we've gotten everybody's creative gears turning inside their head to start thinking in new ways and to get out of your little box that you're in, guys. If you're listening and you feel stuck, I bring people on like Rick just to start expanding your mind. And just, we need to start thinking in different ways and realize that there's always something different besides the 9 to 5. And there's always another possibility that we can discover if we're open to those possibilities. So you guys have been watching and listening to another episode of the Making Magic podcast. And if you've just been listening to the sound of our voices on any one of the popular podcast apps, feel free to follow the show, Making Magic Podcast. It's on Apple, Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. Follow me along for the ride. And if you're watching here on YouTube, feel free to give this video a thumbs up, hit the notification bell, and subscribe. You guys know what to do. Also, subscribe to my buddy Rick Smith Jr. on YouTube. He puts out the most amazing trick shot and magic videos. He's doing a great job with those, and he's constantly active on YouTube. So hope you guys enjoyed that, and we'll see y'all on another episode. We'll be right back.